Welcome to the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I have Eric Meissner with me here today. How you doing, Eric?
Doing great. How are you, Travis?
Good. Eric is a brand new law school graduate, right?
Yep, that's right.
That's awesome. So, Eric, why don't you tell all of our listeners just more about yourself and more about your journey?
Yeah, sure thing. I guess just like a short bio. I'm kind of originally from San Diego, California. I was born there, but lived in Minnesota for about 14 years in my childhood and then returned to San Diego for my high school. And did my undergrad at San Diego State, studied criminal justice, not really knowing exactly what I wanted to do, but kind of got my my interest peaked up on law school, had some good mentors and family members who just kind of encouraged me in that direction. So I started looking into it and thought, you know, this might be a really good career path for me. I love reading, I love writing. So there's a lot of that I know as a lawyer. And basically just started applying. You know, I took the LSAT, started applying to law schools, and I just gotten married around the same time as I graduated, and both my wife and I knew that we wanted to move. We wanted to live somewhere else, kind of experience something new, you know? And me growing up in Minnesota thought, hey, we know we could look at the Midwest. I just applied to like 20 different schools all over the Midwest and the East Coast. And eventually just, it came down to the University of Oklahoma out here in Norman, Oklahoma. And I visited, loved it. Thought the people were great. The school seemed really supportive and great staff members. So I just committed and just kind of dove right in.
Yeah. And you found out grad students have preference on season football tickets, right?
Yeah, of course.
You're like, that does it for me. I get to watch Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, right?
Kyler Murray. Yeah, it's been great.
So talk a little bit more about that process of deciding that you wanted to go to law school. What was the first kind of moment you realized, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to apply to 20 schools. That's a very high number. So I'm curious what that looked like.
Well, it was kind of like I was always interested in a criminal aspect why I studied criminal justice. And I minored in psychology and sociology too, just because I kind of always have been interested in human behavior and kind of why people do things that they do. And I enjoyed talking. I enjoyed arguing. I was like a campus tour guide at San Diego State too. So I kind of enjoyed presenting things to people. And so I kind of saw all these different things that I liked, but there was nothing that kind of fit perfectly in the criminal specific field. I didn't really want to be a police officer very much because I just didn't see myself as the breaking down doors, which kind of changes later on because I became a Marine. But at the time I thought, I don't know if I really have the guts to be a police officer. And so I also cut out prison guard. A lot of my friends are applying to be prison guards. And it's also just a dangerous field. So I started just kind of talking, asking people around me. I asked talked to my family what they thought. And it was really actually my mom who initially brought the idea into my brain to look into law school. And I thought, oh, that might be really good. You know, you get to help people with issues. You get to present, you know, solve problems for people and advocate for them and support them. I thought that might be really good for me. And like I said, I like reading, like writing. So I actually met with one of the district attorneys out there in San Diego who was a family friend and kind of talked to her about it. And she kind of also just kind of affirmed it for me, like that would be a great field for me to look into. So once that happened, I started applying.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. And like I said, I just applied to a ton, mostly just I didn't want to limit myself. The options, my wife and I were very open to go almost anywhere. You know, we had some exclusions. But really also, you know, a lot of people ask me, why would you leave San Diego? You know, it's the greatest city in the United States, which is you know, it's a great vacation spot. But the reality is, it's so expensive to live there.
I mean,
unless you're making, which, you know, a lot of lawyers can't make that kind of money to live out there. We didn't want that. We didn't want to have to do that. I was not interested in, I've never really been interested in the corporate kind of field and the corporate law. It just doesn't vibe with what I want to do. You know, I want to prosecuting and, you know, running and gunning in the courtroom.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let me dig a little bit more into the cost part of things. So when you were applying to these 20 schools, did you look at cost at all? And did you have conversations with different financial aid offices about scholarships? And what was the end result of the costs?
I did look into cost. And that was another reason why I kind of opted out of California law schools. What's kind of ironic about me going to an out-of-state school is that the University of Oklahoma's tuition actually cheaper than many law schools in California.
Wow.
Which is pretty surprising. Not every single one, but the ones that I was looking at in California, it was cheaper. And I was like, and plus cost of living was cheaper. So when I kind of looked into it, I didn't ask them so much about like, I mean, there were some that would say, yeah, we could offer you scholarships, but I knew kind of going in that I wasn't, and this is not a bag on me, I wasn't like a star-studded applicant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I came in with a very average LSAT score, and that was fine. And you know, I did decently in college with my GPA and stuff, and I was involved. So I knew I was a good applicant, but I wasn't going to be someone that they were going to be like, you know, we're going to give you all our money to have you come here.
So how much did you think you were going to leave school with in student debt when you started?
In student debt, I knew it would be somewhere between, at the very least, 90K, at the most 120, because 120 seemed to be pretty average for, you know, just in the research I've done for law students leaving law school.
So when did you make the decision to join the Marine Corps? And, you know, did you get any money for law school for that?
Yeah, I made that decision really during my very first year in my second semester. And, you know, with the Marines, they were candid with me. I knew that they weren't going to pay for my schooling, but they would offer kind of like tuition support. So they can give you kind of like a little stipend to help you cover like books, maybe a little tiny portion of your tuition, you know?
Yeah. Why is that? Because in a lot of other professions like dentistry, you know, medicine or something, you know, the different branches will have different rules, but in a lot of cases they'll cover maybe not all 4 years, but they'll cover, you know, half of it or 3 years or something like that for, you know, a 4-year program. Is the demand for people becoming, you know, Marine Corps lawyers just that high that the Marine Corps can basically just say, hey, you know, we're not going to offer any scholarships or any tuition payment?
That might be a part of it. I know that a number of years back they did have, and actually just kind of backtrack a little bit from I knew in my research, because I did look into the other branches of the military as well, none of them would pay for your schooling right away. But with the Air Force, as far as I know, they might do it differently. But at the time, what they did is they would offer you like at the end of your term or kind of while you're in, they would give you bonuses to help you pay back your loans.
Okay.
I think the Army has a similar program and the Navy might as well. Marine Corps used to, they had like a reenlistment bonus for lawyers a number of years back that would help pay tuition. But for whatever reason, maybe, I mean, I'm assuming it's just budgetary. It's just, you know, something going on with the budget. They just couldn't support that anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting. It seems almost as if they have different rules for different professions too within, you know, the service. It is different. And, you know, whenever I'm looking at this stuff online, they always have completely separate websites for people that are, you know, in dentistry or medicine versus, you know, other career options.
Right.
So that's interesting. So what would you have done if you had not joined the military and you joined in your first year, right?
So yeah, so going back to that, that's when I was kind of started the process. And I did go to the training after my first year and actually got injured while I was out there. So they actually had to send me home. And I had to reapply during my second year. And I went after my second year again and completed the training.
Cool, cool. So yeah, and also, Eric, you're a pretty new parent too, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we have a new little girl. She's only 6 weeks old at this point.
Oh my gosh, congrats. So if, you know, thank listeners, you. If you hear any noises in the background, you know, I'm just amazed that Eric's even on this podcast. So how you slept, I have no idea. So
yeah.
Okay, so you start taking out the debt, you're taking out about, you know, about 100,000, right? So is that about what you owe now?
Yeah, actually I do owe 120 and
120
and some change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So have you started making payments on that yet?
I just came out of deferment. But I still have to kind of talk to them about what the level I want to put it at as far as how much I'm giving back every month.
Sure, sure. So as a Marine in the JAG Corps, you know, what does that look like and how does that compare with, say, other branches in the military?
I think as far as like the day-to-day operations go, like what a judge advocate will do, it's generally the same, I think. I haven't entered that realm yet, but based on everybody I've talked to, you do a lot of the same stuff. Most of the JAGs in the branches are doing, starting out usually prosecution and defense, doing court martials, as well as some general services like, you know, making wills and trusts, doing estate work for military members. The only thing that's different is like when they have you do those things. Like I think the Air Force usually starts you out in the general legal field, like just doing that kind of general stuff I just mentioned. And then they'll kind of throw you into the court martials after a year or two. based on what I've heard from the Marine Corps, it's usually you're going into the court martials right away. But what really sets the Marine Corps apart from the other branches is our training. Because as a Marine officer, we're kind of all on level ground, basically. The Marine Corps has their philosophies of, usually people know these, that every Marine is a rifleman, but also every Marine officer is a provisional rifle platoon commander. And so that's why we go to officer candidate school, and it's the full officer candidate school. So I was there with all the ground guys, ground contracts, and the pilots, aviation. So you're all there together doing the same training and then going to the follow-on training, which is the basic school. And that's where I'm going this coming May. And that is 6 months of just pure basic infantry training and field skills, learning to be a provisional rifle platoon commander. So I'm doing nothing legal until pretty much at the end of this year, I'll finally enter my JAG schooling.
That's unreal. So if we got any like dentists or, you know, I don't know if the Marine Corps has any veterinarians for the, you know, if you have horses at all, but you know, any kind of, you know, other professions, if you want to do your profession, but also know how to shoot a gun, then join the Marine Corps is what you're saying.
Yep. And that's what we do.
So actually one of my close buddies is a lieutenant in the Marine Corps, and he I think is stationed out in Hawaii. And he says that, you know, his guys are so trained and so good at combat, you know, that's what they're trained to do, that when you're in Hawaii and you do not have any kind of major activities besides, you know, training, drill, all those things, he says that, you know, the vast majority of his court martials are, you know, or maybe not court martial, but he has to sit on duty at the desk on the weekends and basically just take calls when, you know, a guy gets into a bar fight. And you know, they just take him, drop the guy off, you know, he puts him, you know, maybe in I guess, what do you call it, the brig in the Marine Corps?
I think so.
Okay. Well, he puts him in that, you know, to cool off and, you know, maybe keep him there for the weekend. And that's interesting. He's like, yeah, he's like, you know, a lot of my job stress is just, you know, having to deal with guys that you know, they don't have, you know, we don't have a ton for them to do, you know,
right?
Kind of interesting. So that's cool. So what is a typical court martial in terms of your role look like?
So I can really only talk about that as far as my experience when I interned. I actually interned for the Air Force right before I went to OCS just to kind of see what their JAGs did on a day to day. And I got to attend one court martial when I was there. And it's almost exactly like, you know, if you've ever been to a trial or been on a jury or seen like the trials, you know, that like the public trials that are televised, very similar. You know, you have a prosecution, you have a defense, and prosecution will get up there and, you know, they do opening arguments and they do, you know, they present their witnesses and there's cross-examination, you know, the presentation of evidence, objections, you know, there's still objections and the rules of evidence, like those are, as far as the military goes, they're pretty much mirror, from what I've heard, they mirror very similarly the federal rules of evidence, you know, if you were a federal prosecutor or something. So that's really all I can say, because I haven't seen it, you know, from the Marine Corps side. I've never seen a Marine prosecute other than in, you know, A Few Good Men. Tom Cruise and Kevin Bacon. That's a great, that's a great resource too, you know?
Yeah. I was just wondering, you know, if you've prosecuted any Jack Nicholsons yet.
No, definitely not.
Okay. So for any terms of commitment that you have to make to the Corps, what do you have to, I mean, they didn't pay for any of your school, so I'm assuming that, you know, you don't have some lengthy contract with them, but maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. The basic commitment is 4 years of active duty service, and then 4 years in the inactive reserve, which you're not a reservist, you're not drilling in that time, but, you know, basically if World War III kicked off and they called you up, then you'd have to go, but that's a four-year basic commitment. I did take a little bit of tuition assistance to help pay for my books and stuff. And when you do that, they're like, okay, well, we'll tack on another year to your term. So I have a 5-year contract, which I was okay with. It's like, hey, it's job security. So I'm fine by that.
Cool. And what kind of income can you make as a JAG in the Marine Corps?
So starting out, it's very comparable to what many, when I've researched, like what an average attorney leaving law school will be making, excluding those who go work for big law corporate firms. You know, those are the folks who are making six figures. It's not that, but it's roughly around like 60,000 is what I would say, roughly in between 60 and 70, depending on, you know, if you are prior enlisted, you already have some time in service and you might get, you know, some more extra pay. And that's including your basic pay as well as basic allowance for housing and basic allowance for subsistence, which is like food and stuff. So you get additional things, additional payments. not just your basic pay. And plus, when you factor in the healthcare plan being on TRICARE, I mean, like full medical and full dental, it's pretty much all covered, which is really nice to have.
The housing benefit's tax-free, isn't it?
It is, yes.
You know, $60,000-$70,000, it's about the same as you'd make as a lot of jobs as an attorney, quite honestly. Maybe even like, you know, small family law kind of operation, mm-hmm. or, you know, private practice. That's typical $60,000 to $80,000 is what I've seen outside of big law for a lot of attorneys.
Yeah. And even here, like in Oklahoma, I was kind of looking at, because if I wasn't doing the military, I knew I kind of wanted to stay in criminal. I wanted to be in the courtroom. I wanted to do trial litigation. I was looking at the district attorneys out here, and like a very new law graduate entering a district attorney's office as an ADA. I mean, out here, it's only like $40,000 really what they're making, which is rough when you have that much debt.
Wow. So yeah. Talking about that a little bit more. So say you're making like $60,000-$70,000 and you're, you know, your housing's covered. Most of your living expenses are covered, your health insurance, you don't have to worry about. In terms of how you would pay your student loan debt, is your wife earning an income right now?
She's not.
Okay. So one income family. So say you're making $60,000 to $70,000, and have you heard about the TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan?
Yes.
So I think you can contribute to that as a Marine, right?
Yep.
So you put, you know, $19,000 in your TSP. That's the maximum that you can contribute. So you lower your income down from $60,000, let's say, to $41,000. So I just put in some numbers just for kicks, just to see what your cost would look like over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And your monthly payment would start off at about $136 a month on something like pay as you earn. And if you summed up 10 years worth of payments, if you stayed in the Corps, then your 10-year cost of payments would be about $18,700. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got $120,000 of debt. If you play your cards right, and if you decide to work full-time and stay in the Corps for 10 years, then you're going to get a total balance of about $185,000, because the balance would keep growing. That amount would be forgiven tax-free, and your total cost of your education would only be about, you know, $18,700. So that's almost like they did cover school for free, pretty close to it, as long as you stay in the Corps. What kind of thoughts do you have about that? Do you think you're going to make the Marine Corps a career? Are you a little unsure yet? Want to see how it goes? What are your thoughts?
My wife and I have kind of agreed that we're going to take it as we go, take each contract as we go. Obviously, the public service loan forgiveness is a huge, huge motivation to stay in at least 10 years. And then at that point, I mean, you're halfway to the 20-year retirement. So, you know, we're kind of like, maybe we'll just, as long as the Marine Corps wants me to stay in, I'll stay in. Because then you're getting the additional retirement and then going to get to, you know, work another career. Because I'll only be like 45 or 46 when I reach my 20 years.
And, you know, that's the real danger there, because that military pension is fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if you do 10 years for PSLF, you know, if you want to look at the guaranteed, you know, money that you get, you know, for retirement in terms of what you'd have to save to get that, I think it's probably $1 million or more. I'd have to run the math. Do you know how much you get for a pension when you do the 20 years as an officer?
I believe, and I could be wrong, y'all could fact check me, but I believe it's half of your monthly paycheck, or whatever you were last earning, like your last highest paycheck, whatever, it's half of that every month.
And does that start right away, or does that start at a certain age?
They actually just incorporated a new retirement system for the military, the blended retirement system, BRS is the acronym. And as far as that goes, if I'm understanding it correctly, that does not come right away. You have to wait till I believe you're 65 to start collecting. If you're in the traditional retirement, which I had the option of choosing which one, then you would be able to start collecting right away. But for most people who are joining right now, they won't get a choice. It's going to be the blended retirement is becoming the default, the standard.
That makes sense. So it's a little bit harder to get that amazing pension at the age of, like, you know, 42 or something.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, well, if you think about that, though, you still have pretty well an amazing, you know, amount of guaranteed income that'll start, if not at in your 40s, it'll start, you know, later, and it'll probably be more money at that point. So that's a really kind of an amazing deal, I think, for a lawyer. Now, in the medical field, you know, if you're a dentist or a physician, you can make a lot more money outside of the service, and you can as a lawyer too. But in, you know, the field of medicine, you're kind of, I think, doing kind of similar type work. Maybe not exactly, of course, but you know what I mean? Like, you're doing, you know, surgeries, and you'd be doing surgeries in the private sector. So at least that's kind of like somewhat similar. But, you know, I guess as a big law attorney, you know, you're maybe doing some corporate work or estate work or something like that. Whereas, you know, you're in the military doing your work, you know, you're making, I think, a lot more money than, you know, a career prosecutor might make. Would you say that's fair? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that would probably be fair in the long run. I know federal prosecutors, they make pretty good money, the U.S. attorneys. But yeah, like state attorneys and, like I said, district attorneys, you'll get there. I think if you put in your time and you stay there, or if you work there for a little while and then maybe go on to like a big law firm or something like that. But as far as the military goes, I think it's pretty good from the get-go, and it only gets better, in my opinion, and it just continues to build.
So also, what do you think about what's going on with law schools right now? It just seems like, you know, a lot of the ones are downsizing their class sizes. Law schools are competing for students more, but I'm not an attorney and you are a JD. So maybe you can share your opinion on that.
I mean, I haven't really tracked with that. I haven't been following what law schools have been doing as far as recruitment goes. I couldn't say.
That's okay. Well, what about people that you go to school with that, or you went to school with at University of Oklahoma? You know, what conversations you had with them, any of your classmates, what kind of career paths were they pursuing, and how did they feel about the student loan debt? What were some of those plans that people might have talked about? Or maybe they talked about the cost of law school or job prospects or something like that.
As far as like where they were going, it ran the gamut. Some people were really bold and wanted to go out and open their own shop, hang their little roof, which is bold, I think, to do. A lot of people were going to work for the district attorneys. Quite a few of the top students, you know, usually it's typical to see this. They go to the big law firms that are out here in Oklahoma City and in Tulsa, where I assume, I didn't really talk to them about how they were going to pay back, because I basically assume that they're going to be making enough money, they're going to be able to pay back their loans starting out, because they were the ones who, you know, went to those big law firms and they're going to put in that work and make those big paychecks from the get-go. And then as far as students working for our local government, working for the state, or working for the district attorneys, I assume they're probably just making their minimum payments, whatever they can afford to pay, you know, back. I actually have not, for whatever reason, I never talked to them about PSLF, even though I knew about it in my head going into the Marine Corps and that was going to be my plan. Never really talked to them about it. So I hope that they know it. And if they don't, I'll send them the links to your website so they can get educated on it. Because I think that's still a great option for those working for the, you know, if you're going to work for the district attorney, I know that I'm pretty confident that would totally qualify for PSLF.
Yeah, that's a great point. Do you know, you probably don't know what the typical salaries are for big law for those top students in Oklahoma?
No, I couldn't say. I assume it's six figures at the minimum.
Yeah.
I'm sure maybe some of them are around that average of the 120K that I know a lot of students from like the tier one law schools, students who are, you know, going to work for the really big firms who will be making that much. It might be up there, like maybe for a couple students, probably not a lot of them, but other than that, I don't know.
I mean, that makes sense, but my guess is probably low six figures, because, you know, your New York City big law, like the most prestigious firms, are like 190 kind of salaries.
Yeah.
So I would assume that, you know, you'd probably be like 110, 120, but I'm not an expert on what that regional cost will look like. You know, I pulled up the Oklahoma law school just tuition, and it's just kind of amazing to me how different the cost can be depending on where you go. So the resident annual cost that they're estimating is like $21,000 a year. So, you know, 3 years of that, you know, 60 something thousand, tack on some accrued interest, that's 70. And then, you know, maybe you have some living expenses that you borrow. So the 120, I think you did a great job keeping your expenses down as a non-resident, because it says that the non-resident cost is about 32,000 per year. So yeah, I mean, that I hear of people all the time, see people all the time that are our clients coming out of, you know, more higher cost programs on the coasts and in, you know, middle America too, but that have way more than that for the in-state resident rate of tuition. That's interesting. It seems like I see this trend in other fields too, like Texas and Oklahoma. Medical kind of programs will often have lower debt than the rest of the country, maybe because of the oil resources or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So do you know if any of your friends that you went to law school had significantly more than 120, like anyone who didn't plan well, or they maybe had a lot more children or something like that?
I mean, I would assume that would probably be the case for some. I kind of felt like the student loan debt was kind of like, it's it's almost like a curse word when you're in school. You don't really want to talk about it. You don't want to know it's there. You just want to focus on your schooling.
Yeah.
So I never asked anybody like, oh, how much you have? Because that's kind of the, that's kind of like the white elephant in the room. We didn't want to acknowledge it, you know?
Well, yeah, it can be really awkward, right? Like, oh, how broke are you, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I don't have any student debt. My parents are multimillionaires. Oh, you have 300,000? Oh, that sucks. Right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So I guess then you're doing okay in terms of the law program. Seems like people are mostly getting pretty decent jobs that are in the legal field. Did you have kind of any wind of people that were struggling to get employment from their law school degree, or was it across the board people were doing okay?
I think as far as everybody who I was like acquainted with, like we were on a first name basis and we could have a conversation, because there are a lot of people I didn't know, still a big enough law school, I didn't know everybody. But from the people I knew, everybody I knew had a job coming out, or they got one very soon after graduating and completing the bar exam.
Yeah, that's good.
So it's very promising. And OU Law has pretty good rates of employment. I mean, we're the number one law school in the state of Oklahoma, and OU is such a household name in this state that I think that speaks a lot if you're going to stay here in Oklahoma.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what would you suggest? So let's say we have some listener that's listening and thinks, wow, you know, the idea of being the core, or, you know, being in another branch of service and using my law degree to be, you know, a JAG is really exciting. What would you recommend to that person? What are some things that they should try to do, and maybe steps that they could take to be competitive and to get, you know, accepted?
Sure. And that's going to vary, I think, a little bit, only a little bit, from branch to branch. Obviously, like, it's always great to have high grades, you know, but you don't have to. I've pretty much always been a middle of the line kind of guy. And that's how I was at OU Law too. I was like just below the middle of the line, actually. But I still got my job. So as far as, you know, what I would advise, so obviously good grades, just do the best you can. Most military, what they're going to look for, I know, especially in the Marine Corps, is like some leadership experience, which would be great if you have prior employment, or if you're just really involved in your undergrad. And if you weren't, maybe taking on something at the law school with one of the organizations or something like that, taking on a leadership role somewhere. I would advise taking classes that are courtroom oriented. So I think evidence is required for most law schools. It's required at OU. So definitely evidence, taking the criminal law courses. But also if your school has some sort of like trial experience classes, like moot court, doing a moot court competition, or like some sort of like trial team, those go a long way, because that will show them that, hey, you're interested in litigating and you've gotten some experience doing it. That'll be very attractive for those who are, you know, for the recruiters who are looking at you. And, you know, when it comes to specifically the Marine Corps, my advice would be, in addition to all of that, is also being physically fit. You have to go in there and show them that you can keep up and you're not going to break down. You know what I mean? Just because OCS is so physically demanding, and that's very different than the other branches. And that I can say with some certainty, because I've spoken to like the Air Force JAGs that are out here at Tinker Air Force Base when I worked there. Their training after they were accepted into their program, I mean, it wasn't that bad. Like, they have their own little like dorm room and they don't have to like clean it up. They have people who come and clean the room, and they kind of just have to do some basic physical training. And, you know, the instructors or whatever might tell them to like do some pushups or something, but it's not that bad, because they're just trying to make you into a basic officer. They want you to know how to salute and be a professional, of course. But when it comes to the Marine Corps, I mean, you just look up like Full Metal Jacket boot camp. That's what you're going to experience at OCS. They're going to get in your face. They're yelling and screaming at you. They're going to make you as stressed out as they can for 10 weeks. So it's serious when you're going in the Marine Corps route. But the great thing about the Marine Corps, what I would say to those who are listening, is they are, at least right now, as far as I know, they're the only program that will take you as a first-year law student, and you can go to training like right away.
And they respect that? Like, they, for example, say we have, you know, heaven forbid, another Iraq war, right? And the Corps has needs. Like, they would allow you to finish law school and not call you up? Are there any guarantees there?
As far as I know, they let you finish school. Your only obligation to them at that point is to graduate law school.
Okay.
Once you've accepted your commission, I'm pretty sure they couldn't call you up, but who knows?
Yeah. And the commitment would be, you know, it starts when you graduate, I'm assuming, right? It doesn't start, like, your 5-year contract doesn't start the first year of law school.
No, it will start once you go on active duty status.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Well, you know, you can't get it all, right? So if you want to join the country club, join the Air Force. And if you want to actually become, you know, a Marine, join the Marines, right?
Yes, yes. And it's definitely, it's a different culture. It's a different lifestyle, all that stuff. So there's no, I'm not trying to knock on any other branches. I'm just kind of telling you how I've heard it. And I can only speak from what I've experienced.
When did they make you go to OCS, like the boot camp, the 10 weeks of, you know, getting yelled at and having to do all this intense stuff? Like, when was that in the journey?
That was in between my first and second years. So it's during the summer. It's a 10-week course during the summer, starting like beginning of June and going into like mid-August. But then I had to go back again after my second year. So like while all of my friends were, you know, doing internships at law firms and working for district attorneys or whatever, I was out there getting my face kicked in. So, it's a different experience, but you are getting paid. That's a good thing. You do get paid to be at OCS. So there's that. You know, a lot of students don't always get paid internships during the summer, so that can be good, but you are sacrificing that summer if you are wanting to gain some legal experience.
Cool. So Eric, if you had to do it all over again, would you do anything differently?
No, I definitely wouldn't. I think this was the best path for me, knowing that I wanted to challenge myself and I wanted to have a career that will kind of throw me in the thick of it from the beginning, from the get-go. And that's really what I wanted. I want to be in the courtroom as soon as possible, gaining that legal experience. I think that's great. I think it makes you very attractive for when you get out of the JAG Corps. And especially for me, like I said, I kind of mentioned earlier, I was kind of just an average student. You know, I wasn't one of the superstars there and I didn't do like the big things that what law students kind of talk about, like doing law review or interning for these big firms. I didn't do that stuff. So I knew that I might not be super attractive just coming straight out of law school. But after my time in the military, pretty confident that I will be attractive to a wide range of employers at that point. So for me, it's kind of like, this is going to be the good thing that will help me get that experience that I need to make myself more attractive. So I wouldn't necessarily do anything different, except I would have liked to have finished the very first time I went instead of having to go twice. That way I could have done, you know, a summer of some legal work, just getting some more legal experience. But
that makes sense. Now, last question, what advice do you have out there for a brand new law student or a brand new attorney? What advice or suggestions would you give them?
You know, I would, as far as like a new student goes, I would advise you to like, don't be shy about exploring different opportunities, dip your toes in a little bit of everything. Some people come into law school thinking, I am going to be a prosecutor, or I am going to do contracts, like transactional work. I think it's good to dip your toes in a little bit of everything if you can. If you have the opportunities, like go work for a judge and see what it's like from that side of the courtroom. Or, you know, yeah, maybe intern for a firm that maybe you wouldn't think I might not love, but you never know. You might end up loving it. That's probably something else I would have done if I had more time. You know, but because my summers were taken up doing all that military training, I didn't really get as many of those opportunities, but I did get the chance to work for like a solo practice at one point for one semester. And that was really interesting to see how, you know, how that works, how that attorney, you know, handles his business and runs his business. And then, you know, I was able to do the internship for the Air Force. So I think that was all very good. So that, I think that would be my biggest piece of advice. You know, don't be shy about exploring a little bit as you work your way through law school. And it ends quick, so, you know, you don't want to delay, you know what I mean? Now's the time to do it is basically what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, seriously. And that's a great spot to leave it on. It's a big deal when you can cut, you know, $120K of law school debt down to projected cost of like, you know, $18,000 with PSLF.
I mean, right.
That's life-changing. That's, you know, a whole, you know, year and a half to 2 years worth of income. So it's real important to get this stuff right, you know. And just a note to the readers, if you want to see the show notes for this episode today, you just go to studentloanplanner.com/11, the number of the episode. And then also you can reach out to us, podcast@studentloanplanner.com, if you want to leave a comment or have a question. And finally, studentloanplanner.com/help, if you want to get some assistance figuring out your law school loans or other student loan debt. So thanks so much, Eric, for being on the show.
Yep, thanks for having me, Travis.
Thanks for listening to today's show. You can email us your comments at podcast@studentloanplanner.com. You can also find show notes at studentloanplanner.com/the number of today's episode. If you know that you need a custom student loan plan, schedule one today with one of our team members at studentloanplanner.com/book. Or if you want to learn more, visit /help. If you like the podcast, please share it with someone who owes more student loan debt than you do. Keep calm and build wealth, and have a great week.